I'll just go say hi and come back. If it goes past 60 seconds, come save me. I watched her go, following the fall of blonde hair down the back of her neck, the outline of the dark bra visible beneath her white t-shirt, the swath of skin exposed in the space between her top and her jeans. "Jesus Christ," I muttered. Peter looked at me.
"What?"
"Nothing. Listen. It's okay," he said. "You can't control thoughts. It happens." "Well, I'm..." I had almost said, "I'm with someone." But I wasn't. But then I wasn't single either. What was I exactly? In love with a girl who was gone. The pain came in a wave. It felt like a physical force trying to tip me over, trying to pull me under, trying to drown me. I saw Megan turn to start heading back toward us. "I'll be back in a sec," I mumbled, standing up. I crossed the bar and pushed through the swinging door marked "Gents." I leaned over one of the sinks, took a few deep breaths, lifted my head to look at my face in the mirror. I was fighting loneliness, I realized. That's what was going on. It was something that had never occurred to me before when I heard stories about people losing loved ones to tragedy or crime. I understood the horror of not knowing what had happened, yes, and the horror of knowing exactly what had happened, which in some cases could be just as awful, if not worse. I knew what people were talking about when they used terms like grief-stricken and bereft and heartbroken. But it had never occurred to me until I was in it myself that there, on top of all those feelings, lay plain old generic loneliness, because the one you love isn't there. It's a manageable feeling with an end date if that person is coming back, but a drowning depth of pain and hopelessness if they're not. It might be interminable. I couldn't even say whether it would ever end or even fade. How could I even face the future like this? What if I always felt this way? How could anyone learn to live with this? The door to the gents swung open and Peter walked in. Stumbled in, rather. His forehead was shiny with sweat. "Adam," he said breathlessly. "What's wrong?" "I don't know." He bent over one of the sinks and splashed water on his face. "I feel a bit off or something." "Listen," I said. "I need to tell you what happened today. Megan says she has a friend on the crew who can maybe get a printout of the key card activity on the cabin door lock last night. And I got a better picture of Ethan and I emailed it to Becky, asking her if she recognizes him, if she can remember him from when she was on the ship." Peter straightened back up. "Estelle's, Becky?"
"Yeah."
"You emailed Becky?" he said flatly.
"Yeah, is... was that okay?"
There it was again. The hardening of his features. The shadow that crossed his face whenever her name came up. Only this time, he didn't bother to hide it. "She doesn't like me," he said. "And I don't like her. She's barely spoken to me since Estelle disappeared. Personally, I think it was because she couldn't stomach the guilt of knowing that she was why. Her and that stupid bloody party." He stopped, bit his lip. "Adam, I think I might be about to throw up." He pushed past me into a stall, kicking the door shut behind him. A moment later, vomiting noises filled the air. I waited a polite length of time before asking whether he was okay. Through the door I heard, "I'll be fine." "There's something else," I said. "Megan, today. She might have caught me looking up a story about Sanna Vray. I went to an internet cafe and apparently she was in there already, and she snuck up on me and saw the screen. I made up a story about the door being open last night and me worrying about cruise ship crimes, and I think she bought it, but we should tread carefully there. The stall door opened, and a greyer, sweatier Peter walked out.
Why were you looking up Sanavray?
I thought maybe I could find out for sure about the note. Peter's eyes rolled back in his head. I stepped toward him. Peter? He fell, slumped back against the sinks. I caught him by the upper arms just before he sank to the floor. Peter?
I think I should go to bed, he mumbled.
I'll take you. Here, throw your arm around my shoulders.
I feel faint.
That's okay. Come on.
The drinks. Maybe.
Can you try to stand?
You should talk.
He stumbled, and again I helped right him.
Ask about.
His words descended into incoherence. Holding Peter up, I kicked the door of the gents open with one foot and found myself face to face with Megan. Her right hand was in a fist raised in mid-air as if she was just about to knock.
I thought you guys had abandoned.
She looked from me to Peter, then back to me.
Fuck. Is he okay?
Not really. He's been sick. I need to get him back to his cabin. Megan quickly went to Peter's other side, lifted his arm, and ducked underneath it, helping hold him up.
Okay, she said. Come on.
I'll help you. We were in the elevator when I felt the headache coming on. I opened Peter's cabin door with my wrong swipe-out card. The inside looked exactly like mine, but with everything turned the other way around. A mirror image. We got him on the bed, and then, with gentle coaxing, persuaded him to lie down. Megan pulled his shoes off while I got the spare blanket from the wardrobe to cover him. When I pulled it down, a white envelope came with it. The kind greeting cards come in. I had seen it before. It was the envelope that Peter kept Estelle's passport and note in. I laid it carefully on his desk. Bending over to do that, turned up the dial on the pain at the base of my skull.
Nice, Megan said.
Now that Peter was safely on the bed, she was taking a moment to look around the cabin.
A deluxe exterior, sea-facing balcony. Treating ourselves, are we? Is yours the same?
Yeah, I said. I'm right next door. These were all that was left. We booked last minute.
There were no interiors. She raised an eyebrow. When did you book?
A couple of weeks ago, I said, realizing that I shouldn't have said anything about that. The more detail I provided, the harder it would be to keep our story straight. I looked down at Peter, who had rolled onto his side away from me. His breathing was deep and regular. Do you think he'll be okay? I asked.
Yeah, sure. Probably just something he ate. You might want to leave him something to throw up in, though.
I pulled the plastic waste basket from under the dressing table and set it down beside the bed.
And water, Megan said. Does he have any bottle stuff?
Can't you drink from the tap? She made a face.
Let's just say I wouldn't recommend it.
I have a bottle in my room, I think. I expected just to go and get the water and come back, but Megan followed me out into the corridor and then into 803. I had bought a 4-pack of small mineral water bottles earlier in the day. It was sitting by the bed, unopened. I started tearing at the plastic wrap, but it felt like a far more difficult task than usual, as if my fingers had suddenly grown thick and fat, and the connection between them and my brain was only intermittent.
Hey, Megan said. I thought you said this was your first cruise.
It is. I managed to free one bottle and started work on another.
Well, there must have been a mix-up then, she was saying. Only returning guests get the bottle of champagne.
Her voice sounded odd to me. Distant somehow, as if she were walking away. But when I looked, she was in the same spot, only a couple of feet from me.
Did you talk to your friend? I asked, about the lock activity.
Oh, I forgot to tell you. It was you.
What?
Sitting down on the bed, I opened one of the bottles and chugged half. I couldn't get anything printed out because apparently there's a log for that kind of thing, but my friend had a quick look on the system. He said the door was opened at 5:30 or around then, and it was opened with your key card.
But that's impossible, I spluttered. I was asleep.
Well, I don't know what to tell you.
When I closed my eyes, the beating pain inside my skull only grew more intense in the darkness.
Adam, are you okay?
Megan crossed the floor and sat on the bed beside me. There was only a scant inch between us. I could feel her presence.
Now you're not looking so great. Do you feel like you're going to throw up? Did you both eat the same thing today? Adam?
The room swayed around me.
Are we moving? I asked. We're on a ship.
Megan reached up to brush a strand of hair off my forehead, then pressed the back of her hand to my skin.
Her touch felt electric. I think you might have a temperature. You could be getting a flu or something. It happens a lot on board, enclosed spaces and recirculated air. She moved her hand down to my shoulder, then up to my neck, then across to my cheek.
In spite of myself, I drifted into her touch, leaned into her hand.
You poor thing, she said. You'll have to tell Peter that his matchmaking efforts will have to wait for another night.
She leaned over and kissed me, gently on the lips.
Peter,
was all I could manage to say. Megan smiled. Her face was just inches from mine.
Are you going to pretend you had nothing to do with it?
With what?
He said that you liked me.
Her voice was a playful whisper. Her hand was still on my skin, moving to the back of my neck, settling just below the epicenter of the pain that was threatening to crack open my skull with its shockwaves.
But that you were too shy to show me.
She sat back suddenly.
Unless he was just messing with me. I mean, no offense. I know he's your friend and everything. But he's a little off, isn't he? There's something about him. He's a little intense. And tonight in the bar, I don't know how many times I caught him staring at me.
I slid my hand under one of the pillows and pulled out Sarah's scarf.
Stylish, Megan said. But is it really your color?
Sarah, I said, but it came out sounding like an indecipherable vowel sound.
What was that? Adam, I think you need to lie down too. I think you had some questionable buffet fare. It can be...
I didn't hear the end of her sentence. A darkness appeared on the edges of my vision and then swarmed in from all sides, reducing it to a pinhole. Then there was only black.
Part 4. Dark Waters. Corinne. Everything looked so different at night. The corridors were low-lit and dim, while the public areas and open decks sparkled with twinkling lights and glowed with soft lamps. The dim light might help her. She was breaking the rules by being off duty and out on the passenger decks. She had changed into the only halfway decent outfit she had brought with her, a delicate summer dress, and was wearing her hair down. Hopefully, if she did happen to meet one of her supervisors or another cabin attendant, they wouldn't recognize her out of uniform and without her hair pulled back. She was on deck 8, methodically walking the corridors, looking for an open cabin door. Some of them had notoriously troublesome locking mechanisms. yet another bug on Blue Wave's brand new ship, and she was hoping to happen upon one that hadn't locked properly when its occupants left. But after searching for a full hour across 5 different decks, Corinne was getting anxious. Every minute she was out in passenger space increased her chances of getting caught there. And so far, every cabin door appeared to be securely locked. Maybe she should give up and head back to crew quarters. Maybe even try to steal a master key, somehow. A few doors up ahead, a young family emerged from their cabin. 2 adults and 4 small kids. 2 boys of about 5 or 6, 1 older girl and 1 younger. The parents were hissing at each other, muttering expletives under their breaths, while the children tussled playfully, oblivious to the tension. The older girl was the last one out, pulling the door shut behind her. She didn't look to see whether it had locked. It hadn't. It banged off the locking mechanism and didn't latch. Corinne knew the sound because she heard it at least a couple of times a shift. She kept moving, walking past the cabin, noticing the sliver of light between the door jamb and the door, following the family up the hallway. Up ahead, the father suddenly stopped and turned around. "Did you lock the door, Jess?" The older girl nodded slowly. "Are you sure?"
"Yes, Dad."
"I better check." The father started down the hall. He was steps away from Corinne now. She met his eyes, smiled at him.
"It is locked, sir," she said. "I heard the click."
He frowned at her just as she passed.
"Damn it!"
She shouldn't have called him sir. That was a mistake. But she was used to addressing passengers that way. It had just slipped out. Corinne kept walking, past the rest of the family now, hoping the father wouldn't bother to go back. She didn't risk turning around to check. Behind her, one of the children shrieked, "Stop it!" whereupon the mother admonished them all. A moment later, they were on the move again, following Corinne down the hall. At the end, she turned right toward the stairs, while they turned left toward the elevators. She stopped at a fire evacuation plan, pretending to study it, until the sounds of the family disappeared completely down the other end. Quickly, she retraced her steps back to cabin 1891. The door was unlatched. The father hadn't gone back. After checking the corridor, Corinne slipped inside and closed the door behind her, slamming it hard to make sure that this time it locked. She turned around, faced into the cabin. Directly opposite Corinne was a frail, skeletal woman, just skin and bones, shrunken inside a gaudy summer dress. Shocked, Corinne went to the mirror above the dressing table to take a closer look. She found red blotches on her neck and chest, blooming purple bruises on her arms. Her hair was thin and wispy, her eyes dull. Dead already. That was how she looked. She had found him just in the nick of time. The cabin was family style, with 1 double bed, 2 singles, and a child's cot. She found the phone mounted on the wall near the TV. Corinne pressed the button marked Guest Services and waited for the call to connect.
"Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. Blackwell," a female voice said. "How may I assist you?"
Corinne took a deep breath. This would have to be convincing.
"Thief," she said. "Thief in cabin, purse, money, all gone."
Then she launched into rapid-fire French, trying to sound as anxious and panicked as she possibly could.
"Ma'am, I'm sorry, I don't speak French. Are you saying, thief took all money, sending security, please?" "Something is missing from your room, is that it, ma'am?"
"Yes, money gone, security, please. En français, s'il vous plaît, c'est possible?"
"Okay, ma'am, I'm sending someone now, please wait there."
Corinne hung up the phone.
so long as the celebrate had only one French-speaking security guard on shift, and the guest services operator didn't think too much about the passenger name registered to this cabin, Luke would be on his way here right now. She began to pace up and down the carpeted floor. What was she going to say to him? She sat down on the nearest bed to conserve her energy. Her breathing was labored, as if she had just climbed up several flights of stairs. There was a pack of bottled water on the floor under the desk. She took one and drank half of it in one go. She had found him. Or maybe in the end, he had found her. Either way, she wouldn't have to hang on much longer. Her pulse was racing at the thought of seeing him again after all this time. She didn't know what she should do when he came in. Would he recognize her? Surely. He clearly knew she was on the ship. But would she recognize him? She had only the one photo to go by. He could have changed his appearance since it was taken. Should she embrace him? Would he let her? Should she call him by his real name, when he must go by Luke now? About 5 minutes after Corinne had hung up the phone, there came a single, sharp knock.
Security,
a voice said through the door. Unsure her legs would bear her weight at this moment, Corinne called out, Come in French. There was a long pause before the door opened, and there he was, standing on the threshold, a perfect match with the picture. It was him. Corinne felt a surge of something in her chest. She had finally found him, with almost no time to spare. He was staring at her, unmoving. He didn't look surprised. In fact, he didn't look anything. His expression was perfectly blank.
Finally, she said in French, I'm so glad to finally...
English.
His voice was an alien's, deeper than she had ever heard. In her mind, he still had the voice of a boy.
I only speak English now. I know you can.
Okay, that's fine. We can talk in English if you want, of course.
He wore the uniform of a security guard, navy trousers and a white shirt, thick, strong arms folded across his chest, raised veins rippling across pale flesh, black hair, short on the sides, a bit longer at the crown, thin lips, eyes the color of glaciers, a perfectly normal-looking young man, attractive, even. That was the problem with these ordinary monsters. They wore no clues to their true nature. He stepped into the cabin and closed the door behind him. Corinne was nervous, but not about that. Every request made to guest services was logged in a system that in a few minutes would ping a reminder to an operator to give the responder a call. Luke would have to report back on his visit to the room, and by beckoning him in, Corinne had forced him to use his key to unlock the door. There was now a record of his arrival. It would be stupid of him to do anything here, and whatever his qualities, stupidity wasn't one of them. The anonymous email she had received, it had been right. He had first been spotted aboard as a paying passenger, but in only a few weeks had somehow managed to return as crew. The picture the emailer had included was his official crew headshot. He walked into the cabin until he was just a foot from the end of the bed, towering over her, looking down. She forced herself to lift her head and look him right in the eye.
Romain, she said. Romy.
It's Luke now. What are you doing here?
He didn't sound angry or aggressive. His tone was entirely flat, matter-of-fact, emotionless. He must have no love for her at all, and after what she had done, who could blame him? "I came here to find you," Corinne said. "We need to talk."
"How did you know I was here?"
"I got an email."
"From who?"
"I don't know. The sender was anonymous, but I think maybe they worked here.
Or they could have been a passenger.
You know, there are documentaries on all the time these days. They have these channels now. They must fill 24 hours with crime shows.
Have you told the police?"
"Told them what?"
"That I'm here."
"Why would I do that? I told you I just want to talk."
"About what?"
"I'm sick, Romy. Cancer. I don't have much time. And before I go, there are things that need to be said. Things I need to say to you. That I should have said to you a long time ago. I didn't know how to say them then."
Romain was peering at her as if at a puzzle he was trying to figure out.
"And after that, you'll leave?"
Corinne nodded. "Yes."
"Say them, then."
"Romy, this will probably be the last time I see you. I would like to have all the time I need. I shouldn't be here right now, and you are on duty. What time does your shift end? Could we meet then?"
He raised an eyebrow.
"Is this about Lydia?"
"What? No, why would—"
"Because I'm not going to hurt her, if that's what you think. I was just trying to find out why you were here."
I know."
"Did you find the photo?"
"Yes." "Why did you leave that for me, Romy?"
"To let you know I was here. That you were right."
"You could have just come and found me."
"I didn't know why you were here. I thought maybe you would just run."
"I want to talk properly."
"I finish at 2, he said. "Where will we meet?"
"How about my cabin?"
"Okay,"
Romain said.
"I'll see you there, Mama."
He turned to go.
Mama. It took everything Corinne had not to flinch at that.
Adam. A booming voice. "This morning." I was dreaming. Sarah was here, alive, in love with me. She had never left. The loud male voice was like an elbow to the ribs. I ignored it. I wanted to stay in the dream. I wanted to stay with Sarah. But then it came again, crackling, louder. "Important announcement." In the dream, I pulled Sarah closer. We both closed our eyes. "Have your attention." It was no good. The two worlds had split. I knew I had been dreaming and that I was awake now, that Sarah was gone. I opened my eyes to see the speckled plastic ceiling tiles of my cabin. "Make yourself known." Was there someone in the room with me? No, I realized. It was the ship's PA system. The cabin was filled with daylight. It was morning, past morning. The light in the room was soft. The sun must be overhead. Could it be so late in the day? Had I slept in for that long? Why hadn't Peter woken me? Where was Peter?
You for your assistance.
More to the point, where was Megan?
I sat up, rubbed my eyes. I was still dressed. I had slept on top of the covers, an empty plastic water bottle by my side. I felt as if I had a bad flu, a hangover, and my head encased in concrete. The headache was gone, but my brain felt sluggish, as if it were fighting to move through a fog. My muscles ached, and I had a crick in my neck. I must have slept funny. I looked around the cabin. Everything seemed as it should be. I was alone. Nothing was out of place. The door was closed. But hadn't Megan been in here? I put my hand to my cheek, touching the spot she had touched. Did she kiss me? What happened then? Where did she go? I poked my head into the bathroom. It was empty too. I washed my face and brushed my teeth, hoping the taste of toothpaste would override the feeling of fur growing on my tongue while I had slept. I pulled open the cabin door and stuck my head out into the hall. The "Do Not Disturb" sign was still on my door. A housekeeping cart was a few cabins down, a vacuum cleaner hanging askew at its end. A stripe of what looked like correction fluid dragged messily across its front. There was no sign of any cabin attendant, or in fact, any other passengers. All was quiet. Too quiet. Even the low thrum of the engines, which I had grown used to, was missing. We had stopped. We weren't sailing. But wasn't today supposed to be spent at sea? Was I in the beginning of some post-zombie apocalypse movie where a guy wakes from a coma to discover that everyone else has disappeared or turned into the walking dead? I went to Peter's cabin and knocked so hard that his door shook. Peter! Peter, are you in there? No response. There was a Do Not Disturb sign on his door handle too. I went to get my extra swipe-out card from my jeans pocket, but there was nothing in there except my own card, the one that opened my cabin. Had I taken them out last night? Had I managed to lose my wrong one? Back in my cabin, I looked around, but there was only one swipe-out card that I could see, the one that opened my own door. As I laid it down on the desk, something about it snagged on the edge of my mind. What was it that Megan had said? The lock activity, that was it. She said I had opened the door, as in my key had, very early yesterday morning. And the champagne bottle, had she said something about that too? I thought you'd never been on a cruise before. There was a sharp rap on the door. I rushed to open it, expecting to see Peter. It was a security guard, dressed in navy blue trousers and a bright white shirt with a walkie-talkie beeping on his belt. He looked Italian, and when he spoke, his English had a thick accent. Behind him, another guard, in an identical uniform, was letting himself into the cabin across the corridor. "Sir, I'm very sorry to disturb you," he said, "but we are conducting a cabin-to-cabin search of the ship for security reasons. Can I ask if you are alone at this moment?"
Yes.
I stepped back inside, motioned at the rest of the room with my hand. I am. The guard, Stefano, whose favourite blue wave destination was Naples, took a step into the room and looked around. He pointed toward the bathroom. Is okay?
Yeah,
I said, nodding.
Sure.
I waited while he went to the bathroom door and ducked his head inside. Is something wrong? I asked. There is a passenger we are unable to locate, he said brightly, but surely it is not a problem. Maybe they are still in France or sleeping in another cabin. Everything is okay, sir. Please do not worry. Something gnawed at my insides. What's the passenger's name? Stefano smiled apologetically.
I'm afraid, sir.
You can't tell me,
It is no problem. I am sure they will be found. Don't worry. He moved back toward the main cabin door, and I stepped aside for him. Actually, I said, while you're here, I lost my key. Are you the guys who give me a replacement, by any chance? You lost your key? Yes. But you are in the room. In this room, yes, but I need to get into my friend's room. It's a bit of a long story. He's the one next door. I am sorry, sir. You must go to the purser. Only the guest whose name is on the cabin can have access to it. So if it's your friend's... I know, I said, but it's fine. You see, the names were actually mixed up. My name is on his cabin door, so that shouldn't be... I stopped. My name was on his cabin door. Peter's was on mine. Meaning that if he went to the purser and said he had lost his key, the cabin he would have been given a new one for was mine, enabling him to open my cabin door whenever he liked. For instance, at 5:30 yesterday morning. Sir? Stefano said. Were you just in there? I pointed at the wall, the one I shared with Peter's cabin. Have you been next door? Was anyone there? Stefano looked unsure whether he should tell me. It is empty, he said after a beat. I thanked him, waved him off, and closed the cabin door, leaning back against it. Had Peter come into my room yesterday morning while I slept? Or had Ethan just made it look that way? A burst of static from the speaker in the ceiling signaled the beginning of another PA announcement. Good afternoon from the bridge. May I please have your attention for a moment? Could our passenger, Adam Dunn, please make himself known to a crew member so they can escort you to the bridge? I looked up at the speaker. This is a message for Adam Dunn. Please make yourself known to a crew member so they can escort you to the bridge. Thank you. Why would I need to go to the bridge? Had they figured out who I was? And where the hell was Peter? I left the cabin, locking the door behind me, and started down the hall toward the elevator bank. What if this was about Peter? What if something had happened to him? What if Ethan had drugged me so he could do something to him? I was supposed to be helping Peter. I was here to help keep us both safe. Had I failed him now as well as Sarah? Had I failed them both? A lump formed in my throat. Why did I ever come here? I couldn't handle this. I couldn't handle life unless it was easy and already going my way. That's probably why Sarah cheated on me, because she knew I was weak. I was such a worthless lump of shit. Sarah probably... I stopped halfway down the hall. Sarah's scarf. I had pulled it out from beneath the pillow last night to show Megan. What had I said to her? For the life of me, I couldn't remember now. I also couldn't remember seeing the scarf in the cabin this morning. I hurried back along the hallway to my door, fumbled with the key in the lock, tried to push open the door before it unlocked, tried again. Ran into the room. Checked the bed, tossed the pillows, pulled back the sheets. Turned a full 360 degrees to check everywhere else. Dropped to the floor to look under the bed. No scarf. Where could it be? Did Megan take it? I looked around the room again. The balcony. There was something out there. Forcing one foot in front of the other, I made it to the sliding doors. I moved as if underwater, even held my breath. I put my hand on the lock, flipped it open, and slid back the door. A cold breeze whipped up my face. I stepped outside. Beneath my feet, the thrumming of the engines far below. We were moving again. The fabric flapped in the wind, blowing out away from the ship. One end of it had been tied in a double knot to the balcony. Navy with white butterflies. Sarah's scarf. Who would have put it out here? Tied it to the railing like this? I reached out a hand to touch the end of it, to be sure it was real, that it was really tied to the railing of my cabin balcony on the Celebrate. It looked different from the last time I saw it. It was stained with something that had dried brown. Blood. What had gone on in my cabin while I slept? Had I really just been sleeping? Megan, I thought. It must be Megan who's missing. And then, we've been set up. We'd been set up. The thought crystallized en route to the oceanic deck. Peter was convinced the worst thing that could happen to us was that his theoretical serial killer might track us down and make sure to take us out next. But we had underestimated him. Drastically. He could do much worse to us than that. Now, I was sure I knew what was happening. Ethan was indeed the killer we suspected him of being, and he had known from the start that Peter and I were here. It didn't make any sense that Peter would let himself into my cabin while I slept and then lie about it afterwards, but it made perfect sense that Ethan had entered my room and then just made it look that way, made me think that it was Peter. Or maybe he didn't know we had accidentally switched over our cards and just faked the swipe-out activity in my name to avoid detection. He had planted Sarah's scarf on my bed. Then, last night, he had followed Peter and me to the bar and somehow slipped something into both our drinks. Megan following me into my cabin may have been a lucky break for him, or perhaps he had engineered that too. After all, it made sense that she would help me bring Peter back to his cabin. Either way, I now had no recollection of most of last night. I had found Sarah's scarf, covered in dried blood, and tied to my balcony railing, and I was being summoned to the Celebrate's bridge, where I was about to be questioned about Megan's disappearance. I had no doubt now that she was the missing passenger security was searching the ship for. Megan, a US citizen. Ethan was finally bringing the FBI here, only they weren't coming for him. They were coming for Peter and me. He had outwitted us. What fools we were for thinking we could just climb aboard and find him. What fools for thinking that it had been our idea. He had taken the women we loved, reeled us like fish onto this ship. His ship. And now he was going for checkmate. A move that would get rid of us all and enable him to keep on killing. But he was doing something much worse than taking our lives. He was going to make it look as if I had taken someone else's. A pair of security guards were standing, as always, opposite the elevator bank on the oceanic deck. I told them who I was, and they nodded. "I'll take him," one said to the other. He took me by the crook of my arm and steered me quietly toward the bow, toward the bridge, past sunburned passengers wrapped in beach towels and smelling of sunscreen, giddy children covered in face paint, and staff with pleasant expressions fixed on their faces walking purposefully in every direction. I had never felt so alone. I was an autopilot. Walk forward. I felt no emotion. I was numb. My parents' faces, Morsi's, Rose's, Maureen's, Jack's. When they tried to force their way up into my consciousness, what will they think? I pushed them back down. Keep walking. Just keep walking. Eventually, we reached a door marked "Authorized Persons Only Beyond This Point." It had a keypad. After the guard punched in a number, the door unlocked with a loud click and he nodded for me to step through it. They would say I was driven to it by grief, or maybe anger. Sarah had cheated on me after all. In fact, almost everyone else seemed to believe that she was out there somewhere, having escaped me, having chosen to leave. They would say I couldn't take it, that I had snapped. We were on the bridge now. A wall of windows offered an expansive view of the jagged and mountainous Côte d'Azur. Its hills were rose-coloured again. It must be mid-afternoon at least. How long had I been unconscious? The coastline was getting closer, growing bigger in the windows. We were returning to Villefranche. They were bringing me back to land. Policemen would come aboard and arrest me. The FBI would be waiting on shore. My wrists would be in handcuffs. My face would be on the news. Officers in navy trousers and white shirts stood in front of consoles, turning knobs and pressing buttons. Most of them turned to look at me now. Some nodded in greeting at my chaperone. Mr. Dunn. A man in a suit had stepped in front of me. Tall, broad-shouldered, middle-aged, with white blonde hair. A laminated lanyard hung from his neck. The name tag read Director of Security. The name was obscured by his tie. Yes, I said weakly. This way, please. He motioned toward a glassed-in office directly behind him. Inside were a table and two chairs. Something was on the table, though I couldn't make it out from here. Some kind of recording equipment? This was to be my interrogation room, then. The director nodded to the guard beside me, who released his grip on my arm. I stepped forward toward the office, stepped inside its open door, and saw that the device on the table wasn't a voice recorder at all. It was a telephone. A phone that was off the hook.
What the?
Take a seat, the director said. His tone was friendly. I did as I was told. He reached across me to pick up the receiver, put it to his ear, and said into it, I have him here for you now. Yes, you're most welcome. Okay, just a second. He held the receiver out to me. I had no idea what was going on, but I took it. I'll just be outside, the director said. Take your time. I watched him leave. Then, slowly, I put the phone to my ear. Hello? I said into the silence. There was a rush of breath, of relief. Then a woman's voice, tremulous and uncertain. Is this Adam? Yes. Adam Dunn. Yes, who's this?
Are you alone?
A pause. I mean, is Peter Brazier with you? In the room with you right now? No, I haven't. Actually, I don't know where he is. Who is this?
You sent me an email. My name is Becky. Becky Richardson?
Estelle's friend.
Yes. I tried calling the number you gave me, but your phone seems to be turned off, and I wasn't sure when you'd get my email.
My phone. I thought back to the cabin. Had it been there? I didn't remember seeing it. I felt in my pockets with my free hand. I didn't have it with me. So that was gone too.
I knew you were on the Celebrate, Becky said. So I thought a ship-to-shore call was best. To be honest, I wasn't even sure they did those anymore, but...
Becky, I said, what's going on?
You can't tell him I called, okay?
Peter, if you can't promise me you won't tell him I called, I'll hang up right now. My mind was a muddle. Fine, yeah, sure. I won't tell him.
He's not going to find her, Becky said.
How do you know? Do you know something he doesn't?
I know something you don't. I know Peter.
My advice to you is to get off that ship as soon as possible. To leave all this be. Leave Peter be. My girlfriend, Sarah, she... I know, and I'm sorry. But Peter isn't going to help you find her. How could he possibly? Becky, I said, rubbing my temples. I don't know what's going on here, but something is. Someone drugged us last night and broke into my cabin. Us? As in you and Peter? Yeah. How is Peter now? I don't know. I haven't seen him yet today. He's not in his cabin. But look, Becky, I don't know what you think you know, but I'm the one here with him, the one who's seeing all this. Adam, I had her passport. Her... What? I had her passport, Estelle's. I had it in my bag. She gave it to me for safekeeping after we boarded the ship. I'm the one who gave it to Peter. So... She gave you the note? Adam, no. Look. A pause. Adam, I'm sorry, but there was no note. He must have just made that part up, along with the stuff about it being posted to him. To take advantage of you, is my guess. There's articles about you online, about the money you were paid for that film. Did you, by any chance, pay for the both of you to get on that ship? I thought of boxes in his living room in the Beau Soleil Palais, the labels on them. West Med Assaults and Thefts, 2009-2012. Crew Eval / Security Department / Atlantic 06. Johnson Suite, Discovery. Copies. The writing on them was the same as on the note Peter had shown me that was supposedly from Estelle. I hadn't realized it at the time because I'd been distracted by the boxes themselves, by what was in them. But I could see it now, clear as day. And Sanna Vray. My guess was there was no passport there at all. That was why I hadn't been able to find any mention of it in the online news stories about Sanna's disappearance. Peter can't accept that Estelle isn't coming back, Becky said. He won't stop this. He can't. He's lying to you. He's a desperate man taking desperate measures, and the only thing to do is to leave him to it. Like I said, you need to get off that ship as soon as possible. Get away from him now, before he pulls you down with him. I thought about how... Outside Fizz that first night, Peter had caught up with me. She's perfect, Adam. Megan is perfect. I had thought he meant she could help us find Ethan. And he did. But now I realized that we had very different ideas about how she could help. It's too late, I said to Becky. He already has. As soon as I hung up the phone, the door opened behind me and someone stepped into the room. Adam, a voice said. A voice I'd heard before. Stay calm, okay? Deep, with a distinctly American accent. I just want to talk to you. I turned to find Ethan Eckhart standing in front of me. I bolted up in an instant and made for the door. Wait, he said, grabbing my arm. Calm down. I just want to talk to you, okay? Get the fuck away from me! I tried for the door again. This time, he stood in front of me, blocking my way. Over his shoulder, I could see some of the officers outside, looking in through the glass. One of them was frowning. His hand moving to the walkie-talkie on his belt as he took a step forward. Ethan turned and waved at the man, smiled. People are looking, he said when he turned back to me. Sit down. His body was still in front of me, his left hand still gripping my right. He looked just as he did in his headshot, though his hair was a bit lighter now and cut tighter. He wasn't in uniform. He was wearing jeans and a white t-shirt. Adam, sit down. What could he do to me, here in this glass room with a bridge full of officers just feet away? What more could he do to me? Defeated, I sat back down. That's it, Ethan said. He leaned back against the wall, arms folded, his body still between me and the door. I heard your name on the PA, so I came here to wait for you. I was going to knock on your cabin door, but I thought this might be better for you. More comfortable. Knock on my door again, you mean? What? How did you know I was here, on board? I searched the manifest for your name on embarkation day, Ethan said. This one and the one before. I thought you might arrive on Monday, but apparently you didn't know yet that Sarah had been aboard. I knew that once you found out where she'd been, there was a danger you'd come here to look for me. And after you called me, well, I figured it was only a matter of time. How did you find out? How about fuck you? Ethan sighed. I deserve that, I know. But Adam, you have to believe me. I didn't mean for this to happen. I never thought... I don't know what got into her, to be honest. The rage boiling up inside me bubbled over and spilled right out of my mouth. You fucking shit! You don't know what got into her! What could she possibly have done to deserve what you did? What I did? Ethan blinked, gave me a blank look. I don't know what she's told you, but she broke up with me. She said I'd been a silly mistake. She picked you. Her words exactly. I pick Adam. Then she just left without even telling me she was going. Or telling you, it turned out. When you called me and said the Gardaí were involved, he shook his head. Man, like I said, I don't know what got into her. Did she call you? I tried to clear a path through my thoughts. Half an hour ago, I was sure I was about to be frog-marched off the Celebrate and charged with Megan's murder. 5 minutes ago, Becky Richardson told me that Peter never received Estelle's passport in the post at all, and that he told me that just so he could take advantage of me. That he wrote Estelle's note himself so he could extort from me the cash he needed to continue his quest to find out what had happened to his wife on this ship. Now Sarah's killer and I were having a perfectly polite human conversation during which he told me that she had left him alive and picked me. Go back to the beginning, I said. Start at the start. Well, it's a long story. I have time. Do you want a coffee? Ethan asked inexplicably. I glared at him. No? He held up his hands. Okay, man. Sorry, I was just trying to be polite. Then he walked around to the other side of the table, the one farthest from the door, and took the seat opposite me. If I wanted, I could easily bolt out the door. What the hell was going on? When would I be able to stop asking myself that question? I want to say something to you first, Ethan said. I know this is probably hard for you to hear, and I get that, but I'm in love with her. I don't know what happened that day in the office when we first met, but I just felt something. Some kind of connection. I'd never felt it before. My marriage had just ended, and she was feeling like you two weren't going any... Wait, I said, holding up a hand. You're in love with her? Yeah. I thought she might have been in love with me too, until we came here. You're in love with her? That's what I said. Present tense. Huh? She's alive, you're saying. Is that what you're telling me? Alive? What the... Ethan sat back in his chair, shook his head at me. Man, I think you should start at the beginning because I don't have the first clue what the heck you're talking about. His eyes widened. Wait, do you... Is she okay? Did something happen to her? A minute ago, I would have said, yeah, you piece of shit. But now, I wasn't so sure. I looked at Ethan as if I had never seen him before, as if I had no preconceived ideas about him or any advanced information on who he was. He looked ordinary, average, normal. Until we met in this room, I had been telling myself that this was deliberate, that he was an everyman so he could blend into the background unnoticed. But now I wondered whether he might be just ordinary after all. Maybe that was all he was.
Sarah. Sarah, is that you? Talk to me, please. Just talk to me.
She came onto the ship with you, I said. Boarded the Celebrate the Monday before last. Yeah. You spent a night in Barcelona first, in a hotel. If we flew out from Cork on Monday morning, we wouldn't have made it to the port on time. You boarded the ship together. Did you share a cabin? We were supposed to. I was on an educational, a comped staff trip. Every director gets one so they can experience the product like a customer. And Sarah was my guest.
That was why Blue Wave hadn't been able to find her reservation. Because she didn't have one. She was on his. Ethan's had presumably been made in-house, at the corporate level, outside the normal reservation system. And it would look doubly bad to have a crew member's cruise companion disappear off the ship, especially if he hadn't bothered to report her missing. Some tall tale about a computer glitch easily covered Blue Wave's ass on that.
What happened? I asked. I think Sarah... A cough, a nervous throat clearing. Sarah was really unsure about the whole thing. Her and me, I mean. Well, I suppose you and her too. She thought maybe we... When you're having an affair, there's the element of danger. The excitement of sneaking around, the novelty of the secret. Know what I mean? Actually, no. Yeah, well, she was being weird all day. Wouldn't talk to me about it. I thought she might actually turn around and tell me she wasn't even getting on the ship, that she was going home instead. But she did get on, and then I had to go meet my new line manager, so she went to dinner alone, and then afterwards we had a fight, out on deck. On Pacific by the grotto pool. I don't give a flying fuck where it happened, Ethan. Tell me what happened. She broke up with me, okay? She said it felt wrong and that it had all been a mistake, that she loved you and that... She said she couldn't believe she had hurt you so much already. She was going to get off the ship in the morning, fly straight home from Nice and tell you everything. Ask you if you two could start all over again.